This was a charged moment for Sri Lanka. May 2022, and hundreds of thousands of people protesting a system they said was rotten, denouncing a government they accused of bleeding the country dry. At the heart of the protests, political art, with a unique signature, part visual, part musical. Sri Lanka had witnessed protests before, but these were nationwide, and there was no stopping them until the departure in July of President Gotabaya Rajapaksa, and with him, an entire political dynasty.
I have been part of Sri Lankan protests for some time now, and this was the first time in which art created so many spaces for people to come and interact in that expression. So in a way, it was becoming a community expression, the collective expression of a group of people.
A lot of the art really promoted a critique of the politics of the country, and in ways that people were, please understand, very fearful. This was a president who was nicknamed the Terminator by his own family. This was a president who has allegations of crimes against humanity and war crimes. So this was a much feared family. And the protest provided an opportunity for artists of all shapes, sizes and colors from all over the country to articulate a critique of this family and the militarization through artistic production.
Five men, all of them Rajapaksas, including President Gotabaya Rajapaksa and his brother Mahinda, the Prime Minister. All of them in government when the protests began. All accused of corruption. Members of a family notorious for clamping down on freedom of the press. Caricatured by artist Dilshan Fernando as mythical demons. Scenes from the protests rendered in the style of Renaissance paintings by multimedia artist Muvindu Binoy. A photo of an unknown Sri Lankan woman with her baby during the protests. This was an image that went viral. The name of the photographer is still not known. And then this mural, located at what became the heart of the protests in the city of Colombo, a space for activism and art called Kota Gogama, which translates into the catchphrase and hashtag of the uprisings, Kota, go home.
Yeah, it was a wonderful few days actually working on that mural. We all came together to say what we want to see and who we want our leaders to be and who we want to represent the voices of the people going forward, right? And the voices of, marginalized communities coming first. Give them something of themselves to remember, as well as give society something to remember. So the whole idea is, to create beauty during times of strife.
And that's quite extraordinary for a number of reasons in terms of the identity of the producers, the manner in which the mural depicted women and feminism as central and core to the protest. There are elements of justice, of equality, of equity, of a feminist agenda, of a multi-ethnic perspective. So there's a lot of things happening in that mural. You don't find the depiction of that kind of inter-religious identity in a mural in the middle of Colombo at a time when you thought that the Rajapaksas were in power.
The protests and the art at the center of it all put news outlets on the spot. The country's media has long been intimidated and largely tamed by the state. A civil war that lasted nearly 30 years has left scars on Sri Lankan journalism. Then, when Gotabaya Rajapaksa came into office in 2019, his reputation for control, through methods that were often brutal, made a media industry already in a crouch cower further. Now, journalists carefully weighed the question, was it safe to deviate from the officially approved line? The narratives that cast the protesters as the villains of the piece?
The typical Rajapaksa haters, the liberals, the haters of the conservative establishment, the guys who support ISIS.
Protesters argued their way into the studios of the state-owned Rupavahini Corporation and went on air to say this. As more and more demonstrators flooded the streets, putting their livelihoods and sometimes their lives on the line, mainstream media was painted, or rather animated, as part of an enemy establishment. The man who created the art in this music video is Randy Chris Pereira.
It kind of helped to really tell what was actually going on, because a lot of people do depend on only the mainstream media. At that time, there were a lot of suppression and a lot of media institutions. They would kind of twist the things and paint us in a very derogatory way. So we were getting attacked from all angles. So that's what I was depicting out there.
These types of arts and video clips, which are easily shareable on WhatsApp, that you can post on Facebook and Twitter, etc., they vocalize sentiments that you are not sometimes able to vocalize yourself. So sometimes art can even give voice to things that you know that are inside you but are unable to express.
The protest allowed the space physically offline, but also fundamentally online on social media, for the democratization of artistic production and artistic appreciation. That was unprecedented in terms of the volume of the output, the pace of the output, and the engagement with the output. In any way you want to measure it, I've never seen anything like it. So that's quite unique. But what's not unique is art being part of a political struggle in the country.
One of Sri Lanka's most prominent political artists, Chandragupta Tenuvara, has created a genre of work called barrelism. He uses steel barrels, the kind seen at army checkpoints, to depict the normalization of an increasingly militarized society. Painter and archaeologist Jagat Veerasinghe is motivated by the fractures in Sri Lankan society. His work grapples with notions of nationhood, identity, religion, and confrontation. And Anoma Vijayavardhana has dwelt on matters relating to the environment in her politically conscious art. The Sri Lankan tradition of art in times of turmoil was unmissable on the streets during the protests. Possibly the surest indication of the impact of the art was the fact that so much of it got torn down by the authorities.
We have no idea where the mural really went or who dismantled this. I mean, art has the power to change people's minds, lives, and they start to think for the first time in their lives, probably. And people who think are harder to control. So it's pretty obvious to know why it was targeted so much.
The autocrat's worst nightmare is the loss of the control over how he's depicted. Because here was ribald criticism, open criticism. And obviously the authorities went after the protests and the protesters in the main, but also the art, because it was so powerful. It captivated the imagination. It communicated the politics. It mobilized the community, not just to specific locations, but the entirety of the country and even beyond, like myself in the diaspora. So it was local, it was global, and it was everything that the government wanted to clamp down on.
What's happening in Sri Lanka at the moment is the old order is dying and the new is yet to be born. And I think in that phase of transition, we need a lot of creativity, we need a lot of reflection, and the role that artists can play in that is actually by creating those spaces, those messages, those creative works that could give people the space to ask the right questions so that they can find some solutions for these systemic problems we are trying to grapple with.